Tonight on the Daily Debrief, verdicts in two trials.
Look at the face of somebody that is filled with hatred.
A prosecutor lashes out as jurors must decide whether to execute a convicted cop killer. Plus, jurors decide the fate of a man accused of killing his infant son through neglect. That's straight ahead on the Daily Debrief for Tuesday, November 6th. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Debrief. Breaking news right off the top tonight. Chris Watts has reportedly reached a plea deal with Colorado prosecutors. According to local sources, Watts reached the deal to avoid the death penalty. Details are still emerging about that purported plea deal, but we do know Watts was scheduled to appear in court this afternoon. Watts was accused of killing his wife, Shannon, and his two daughters, Bella and Celeste. Shannon was pregnant with the couple's third child when she disappeared and was found dead. Now to the case we've been covering on the Law and Crime Network today. We begin in Memphis, Tennessee, with one of those two cases where jurors have delivered a verdict on whether Tremaine Wilborn should be executed or sent to prison for life. Just as this trial was beginning, Wilborn pleaded guilty to carjacking and firearms charges. That left jurors to decide whether he was guilty of the first count, murder. They agreed that he was. This case involved the death of Officer Sean Bolton. Jurors agreed that Wilborn shot Bolton 8 times to stop Officer Bolton from arresting him. Before jurors delivered their verdict in this penalty phase, the courtroom got heated as prosecutors closed their case by screaming and pointing at the defendant. A family member was ordered to leave. Then the defendant himself popped off at the prosecutor, calling her a racist. Just listen. So the judge had to decide two things after that whole scenario unrolled. First, whether the prosecutor was out of line, and second, what should happen to the defendant for mouthing off. The decision? No mistrial here.
I would not reward Mr. Wilborn for his misconduct, for his outrageous behavior in this courtroom, and declare a mistrial because Mr. Wilborn chose to act inappropriately in this courtroom. We'll deny the request for a mistrial because, again, time for the record, that the state of Tennessee is not engaged in an improper argument. There is no plain error. There is no fundamental error in this case. The argument the state has given, what's in the process given, is not an improper argument. It is well within the province of lawyers, as the court had indicated earlier, defense or the prosecution may make a zealous argument, may zealously advocate their cases, and they may, in fact, make impassioned arguments. Quoting again, prosecutors, no less than defense counsel, may use colorful and forceful language in their closing arguments. And that is what Tennessee law is. I would not grant a mistrial because Mr. Wilborn created error, and I would give everybody this blueprint. If you want to stop your trial, if you want to continue never to go to trial, every time you go to trial, just do something outrageous, interfere with the administration of justice, and a judge would have to declare a mistrial. You can continue that path for 20, 30, 40 years and never bring your case to a conclusion.
Here to help us understand what happened there. So, Michael, the judge quoted a case to say in Tennessee, prosecutors can get up there and basically scream at the defendant. So the focus here turns to the defendant, not the prosecutor. That's interesting.
It is, because even though I believe in the zealous advocacy, I've never seen a prosecutor go over to the defense table and point to the defendant in his face, maybe gesture from the podium or somewhere near the jury, but not to do it so aggressively. So I think that was exciting. That was interesting. I'd never seen that before.
You know, there was a big debate here here over whether that would have resulted in reversible error in other states, and our experienced prosecutors on staff here at Law and Crime said that it would. But in Tennessee, they allow it.
You know, and the judge made the most important point. If you're going to allow that kind of activity by the defendant to cause a mistrial, and by that I mean his reaction, then if I'm the defense counsel, I'm sitting at the table and I'm getting my elbow ready. Okay, my defense attorney, I'm telling my client now's the time to jump up.
What really spurred it on here, though? I mean, it was the prosecutor who really raised my eyebrows first.
I think she knew his trigger was a little touchy. The defendant. And she played on that, and she set him off. And it worked.
Well, it did, and ultimately, this case moved along. Earlier in the day, another prosecutor said she hoped Officer Sean Bolton was thinking of his family, friends, and colleagues in the moments before he died.
There is no doubt that Tremaine Wilborn is the one who blew Officer Bolton's face apart and then put 8 more shots in him.
Sean, lying in the street, trying to hold his face together with his own hands, trying to call for help. Hopefully, he wasn't thinking about the awful, searing pain. Hopefully, he didn't sense that convicted felon Tremaine Wilborn was making cold, calculated decisions a few feet away. Hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, he did not see coming. Shot 2, shot 3, shot 4, shot 5, shot 6, shot 7, shot 8, shot 9. Hopefully, that's not what was in his mind, because we know in Tremaine Wilborn's mind, he'd made the decision already that his freedom was more important than Sean's life.
After that emotional appeal, the defense walked the jury through the mechanics of how each person on the jury and how indeed one person alone could decide to save their client's life.
Asking you to make a judgment. We're asking you to face the decision and render a verdict. That decision is going to define the remainder of a man's life. And that is, what verdict should you render? Shall Tremaine die or shall Tremaine live? Nobody else can do it. Only you. That evaluation of what we call mitigation is definitely an individual and personal choice. It is not something that everybody comes to a unanimous finding that one thing is better than another. For certain people, it will be one mitigating factors, for others it would be another. But you must decide, each and every one of you must decide for himself or herself. This is an individual choice.
Jurors deliberated their penalty phase verdict in this case for about 2 hours before returning with this.
We, the jury, unanimously find that such statutory aggravating circumstance or circumstances do not outweigh any mitigating circumstances or circumstances beyond a reasonable doubt. Therefore, we, the jury, unanimously agree that the defendant shall be sentenced to imprisonment for life without possibility of parole.
The defendant himself wasn't even in court to hear the reading of the verdict because he refused to return after that outburst. Presumably, his attorneys delivered the news that the jury spared his life. Michael Bryant, back with us now. Many people thought this would be a death sentence. The jury surprised us.
I think so. And it's clear that they latched on to the mitigating factors that were presented during the penalty phase. The kid was not the best treated kid growing up. His mom was out there partying while he and his brothers and sisters were just kind of on their
own. You know, she was described as a drug addicted hooker.
Yeah, nice. Nice, Mom. Mother of the year.
You know, the father had been killed in a car accident relatively early on. So apparently the jury found that that outweighed that this man had a felony record when he shot a police officer in the face.
Yeah, in the way he shot him over and over and over again. And the prosecution did a great job of trying to reinforce just how egregious that was. Not one shot and he bled out on the street. This was over and over. This was overkill.
There was a post-trial press conference. And if I was there, I'm that guy, I would have said to the prosecutor, you know, you were up there railing on this defendant. Do you think that turned the jury off and they saved his life because they didn't like the way you handled that closing argument?
You know, that's a possibility because the defendant himself gave the jury plenty of reasons to hate him. And I was a bit surprised that they didn't go for the death penalty. So maybe you're right. Maybe his prosecution ultimately saved the defendant's life.
You know, and it's an interesting fact here that the family of the victim wanted prosecutors to push forward even though the defendant wanted to enter a last-minute guilty plea. So they basically pushed forward specifically for the death penalty and they lost.
Yes, and they did say, you know, officially, hey, whatever the jury comes up with, we're fine with that. It's their decision. But I have to agree with you. I think deep down, they wanted this guy gone.
All right, let's move along now to Iowa, where jurors there heard testimony, closing arguments, and delivered a verdict in the case against Zachary Keene. Prosecutors said Keene neglected to care for his four-month-old child, causing the child to die. Keene was accused under a specific subsection of Iowa's first-degree murder law, which covers the death of a child. He was also accused of child endangerment for basically neglecting his four-month-old to the point the child died. Keene appeared upset in court during a 911 call earlier this week where his girlfriend checked on him and found that child dead, and then later he refused to look at autopsy photos of his dead child. The defense tactic here has been to blame the authorities, blame the child's mother, but mostly for the defendant to say he had no clue his child was suffering from neglect. The final defense witness was an expert on postpartum depression.
Interviews and the depositions that this family was constantly struggling around financial issues. Well, from the depositions and the interviews, it appeared that they frequently moved. Housing in some cases was quite inadequate from what I could tell. Certainly the relationship with the partner is something we focus on quite a bit. The record of depositions and interviews that I reviewed suggested that this couple had quite a bit of difficulty, both in their personal relationship over time, as well as in relationships with the family members. Good social support can often mitigate the effects of stressors. I would say, based on my review, that it was variable. Sometimes they had good, but often it was not very strong from family and friends. And from the record, it would appear to me that Cheyenne would withdraw from opportunities for social support. So generally, I would say it was pretty inadequate.
Still ahead tonight on the Daily Debrief, we are not finished in the Zachary Keene case. Prosecutors and defense attorneys deliver their closing arguments plus the verdict when we return. That's after the break. few other reports tonight before we head back to court for the Keene verdict. It's day two of jury selection in the criminal trial against an accused drug lord who once escaped from a Mexican prison. Joaquin Guzman, better known as El Chapo, faces federal charges in the United States. The charges involve trafficking 200 tons of cocaine into the U.S., and accusations he murdered his rivals. Security is tight, and the Brooklyn Bridge has been shut down at times to facilitate secure movements. One potential juror was tossed from the panel because he asked for El Chapo's autograph. Making headlines tonight with Anthony Velez.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country. Authorities in Texas released footage of the daring moments a police chief saved an unconscious baby. A Splendora ISD police chief, Rex Evans, was driving in his patrol car when the child's frantic family drove up to him pleading for assistance. That's when Evans snapped into action. The infant girl is expected to be okay. A McDonald's worker in Texas, reportedly sent home after being late on his first day of work, allegedly robbed another McDonald's restaurant 5 miles away. 19-year-old David Gomez Beltran was arrested after he allegedly wore his newly issued uniform to a different McDonald's restaurant before pulling a gun on the manager and making off with $1,500. Gomez Beltran was reportedly identified as the robber after the manager who sent him home for coming in late on his first day of work recognized the new hire on security footage. Gomez Beltran now faces one count of aggravated robbery. Authorities in New York City released graphic footage of a Rikers Island guard duking it out with an inmate. The unidentified officer and inmate can be seen standing chest to chest in a common area of the jail before words led to fists. At one point, the inmate can be seen tossing a trash can at the officer, all while other inmates casually saunter by. The Department of Corrections would not confirm when the fight actually occurred, only saying the incident happened weeks ago. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for Law and Crime.
It's Election Day in the United States, and tomorrow we here at the Law and Crime Network are monitoring legal issues that may pop up surrounding the election. It'll be a legally fascinating but nonpartisan breakdown of the legal issues that are happening today. That begins tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the Law and Crime Network. Back to the Zachary Keene case now with closing arguments. Prosecutors characterized the defendant as a selfish man who simply ignored the cries of his dying son.
Every time he went in there and turned that fan on while his son sat in that hot and sweltering room with a quilt over the window with no air circulation whatsoever, with blankets layered over the top of him, every time the defendant did that to cool himself off, it was a choice. It was an act. He chose not to go in and help Sterling. The fan in the living room, every time he turned that on for his own comfort. Again, it's an act. That switching of the switch. That was an act that didn't involve going into his son's room and helping him. Every time he took a step in that tiny apartment where you could hear every cry that Sterling made, and he said that during his interview. Oh yeah, you could hear him anywhere in that apartment. And he was loud. How long do you think Sterling cried for during this time frame? You know, Dr. Klein testified about the fact that over time, Sterling was going to become lethargic and not have the energy to move around much and to cry. But you know it was bad at the beginning.
Now, there you heard prosecutors being careful to outline a series of intentional acts made by the defendant, which met the legal requirement of an intentional act of denying care to little Sterling Keene. Now, without an intentional act, prosecutors wouldn't have a case. Prosecutors did not hide the graphic nature of the child's death next.
He had a diaper full of sewage. Hey, that child had not been changed for at least 10 to 14 days. You know that from Dr. Huntington's testimony. He had exposed raw skin, never been treated.
still rubbing up against that one diaper that he had on, having the feces and the urine on top of it, soaking into it, with the E. coli getting into his blood, into his system, making his bodily organs shut down. He was hungry and he was dehydrated. The maggots and the bugs, the flies, wouldn't have been in the places that they were had he been touched or picked up or moved in any way. Babies do need food, they do need water, but they also need touch. They need care. And he sat in that swing by himself, all alone in a dark, hot room with no one to help him.
The defense basically pointed the finger right back at Zachary Keene's girlfriend, the child's mother.
Cheyenne Harris was the primary caretaker for Sterling. That is absolutely undisputed. This is important because she was at home with Sterling. She knew when Sterling was fed or not fed. She knew when Sterling was changed or not changed. I want to be 100% clear about this when I talk about Ms. Harris. I am not up here to villainize her. Villainize her, I believe, would be to villainize depression. We have far too much of that in our society. It's her depression that makes this a tragedy. When we talk about blaming, I think that comes from the natural desire to seek vengeance and not justice. The evidence in this case is absolutely undisputed that she stayed at home with Nala and with Sterling. Her testimony, the way that Mr. Kane was raised, is that a woman took the child-rearing role and a man took the breadwinner role.
Jurors delivered this verdict this afternoon.
Defendant, please rise. State of Iowa versus Zachary Keene, verdict form, count one. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree. Count two, we, the jury, find the defendant guilty of child endangerment causing the death of a child.
Back for more discussion now, attorney Michael Bryant. Michael, this was not a surprise to anybody who listened to the graphic testimony in this case and these defense attempts to get out from underneath the charges.
Boy, the oblivious defense. I'm oblivious to everything. I'm oblivious to the kid sitting there stewing in his own feces for more than a week. I'm oblivious that he isn't eating. I'm oblivious that when I take the dirty diapers out, I think the leftover smell is from those diapers. And by the way, mom is really the problem.
Horrible. Yeah, you know, this whole attempt to turn around and say, well, you know, in this culture, and he was raised Mennonite, that it's the man's job to go be the breadwinner and the mother's job to take care of the kid. Well, the father's testimony basically contradicted that.
Yes.
So the defense is trying to twist the father's own words, and the father was a defense witness.
It was horrible. I mean, what are you going to do? There was not a lot of good stuff for the defense to work with here. So they did what they could, maybe hope to muddy the water a little bit. Ultimately, did not work.
Michael Bryant, always appreciate your insight in these cases.
Nice to see you, sir.
All right. That's all the time we have today on the Daily Debrief. And thank you, sir. A reminder that the Law and Crime Network will be streaming the trials we discussed beginning at 9 a.m. When they are in session, we are expecting some new cases starting tomorrow. From all of us at Law and Crime, have a good evening. We will see you back here tomorrow, of course. And also, we have that special election coverage beginning at 9. And a new case out of Florida. Have a good evening. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.